Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, May 28th, day number 148 of 2013. It's a cloudy, humid kind of day here in the Dallas area. And for the first time in the baseball season, for the very first time, we can report that the Rangers have lost three in a row. And that's not something they've been doing. They're not losing a lot this year, so three in a row is a bit of a bit of an uncomfortable position for us Rangers fans, but I'm sure they'll get their act together and we'll start winning again. They dropped a doubleheader in Arizona Memorial Day, and then, of course, they lost that extra innings game on Sunday. I think maybe they were just a bit tired. I don't know. Playing three games in 24 hours is probably a little bit too much. Today we're going to be talking about the state of liberalism, and we have a great guest, a new guest on our show today, Trevor Thomas, and I saw his article at the American Thinker talking about the state of liberalism. Very interesting ideas, very interesting message that Trevor is making. So we'll be talking to him about not just theoretically what's happening with liberalism, but things like the Boy Scouts, for example. You know, I had three boys in the Boy Scouts years ago, you know, like 15 years or so. My three sons were in the Boy Scouts, and I think it really breaks my heart to see what's happening with the Boy Scouts. So we'll be getting into a little bit of that, as well as other things with Trevor Thomas, blogger, as well as he has his own website, and he contributes to the American Thinker. My book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, the story of our family coming to the United States, available in print and Kindle over at the website, CubanosInWisconsin.com. You know, we did something for Mother's Day. We dedicated a bunch of books. People would purchase a book for their Cuban mother, Cuban grandmother, and we had the opportunity to dedicate many of those books. Well, you can do the same for Father's Day. Just go to that special feature on the website where you can click, and we will be able to dedicate a book to a particular person. So if you tell us your father's name or your grandfather's name, we'll be able to do a dedication of the book. I know it went real well with Mother's Day, and I'm sure it will go just as well with Father's Day. On this day in history, a couple of very interesting things. In 1754, that's a long time ago, 1754, George Washington, who was a young man at the time, he was a member of the British Army, he saw his first combat experience, or had his first combat experience on this day in 1754. As a member of the British Army, they got into some combat. This was the French Indian Wars. I don't know enough about it to tell you, other than it just happened on this day in 1754. But the great George Washington saw action, or military action, for the first time on this day in 1754. And on this day in 1937, this caught me by surprise. I thought this company was a lot older than that. But in 1937, the company Volkswagen was actually founded on this day. It had something to do with the German government, of course, Nazi, and a very interesting story behind Volkswagen. But it started on this day in 1937. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Trevor Thomas right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let's say hello to Trevor Thomas. How are you, Trevor?
I'm doing very well, Silvio. Thank you for having me on.
It's my my pleasure. As I mentioned, I saw your name on one of the articles at the American Thinker, and wanted to have you on and chat about the article that you wrote about modern liberalism. But tell us a little bit about yourself, Trevor. Tell us how you got into writing.
Well, I've been a teacher of mathematics for about 20 years. my education is actually in physics and mathematics, and went to school originally to be an engineer, and you know, discovered the gift of teaching, and I've done that in public school and private school, like I said, for about the last two decades. And when I hit about 30 years old, I got interested in, more and more into politics, and especially some of the things that were going on locally, and started replying to some of the things that I was reading in the news. And that was around the year 2000. And, of course, you know, the Internet took off, and it wasn't long after that that I decided I would start my own website. And I've been writing in my local paper for about the last dozen years, and have been submitting things to various publications like American Thinker for probably the last 5 years or so.
Wow. You know, it's interesting how so many people got into blogging. I have a similar story. I used to send letters to the editor, to the newspapers, or try to call in talk shows, but it was, you know, very futile because the odds were always overwhelmingly against the newspaper printing a letter. In fact, I think they even had a policy that they couldn't print more than one of your letters a year or something like that, so that they would have a broad-based opinion. And I myself, in 2004, decided to start blogging and just created my own blog. And of course, then the radio show started in 2007. So it is nice that technology allows people like you and me an opportunity to do something that would have never been possible 15, 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
And it's a way of us channeling our opinions into the marketplace of ideas, and that's a good thing, I think, overall, to have more ideas, more discussion, Trevor.
Absolutely. I live in northeast Georgia, in Gainesville, Georgia, and thankfully one of the most conservative parts of the country, so I have a lot of people around here that tend to agree with me, and so the local newspaper, the editors kind of found favor with, or I kind of found favor with them, and became kind of local favorites. So I've enjoyed the feedback over the years and gotten a lot of encouragement from that, and just continued to. And my wife has been a big help too. She's a professional editor, and she edits everything I write, and so that's been a huge help as well.
Yes, I can tell you from having written a book, there's nothing like having an editor. I had the good fortune of having a wonderful editor as well, and it makes a big difference, because when you write something, you think it's great, and then when you get your first your edited copy back, you begin to realize that you need to make some changes. My editor is a wonderful lady here in the Dallas area, Meg Berry, who does that for a living. She edits, and she was a lot of help in putting together the book. But let me just ask you one more thing about Georgia, or the part of Georgia you live in. Is that where Newt Gingrich used to be a congressman? That part of Georgia?
Not exactly. He was a bit more towards the Athens area, unless I'm mistaken. He may have been west of Atlanta originally, but. Newt is very familiar to people in this area, and he was not ever my congressman, though, but very familiar. Folks around here know him well, and of course, follow what he has to say on the television and the radio quite closely.
Yeah, he's a very interesting fellow. Of course, when he first got into politics, which would have been probably in the 70s, Georgia was still a Democrat state, or at least...
Yes.
In terms of party, not ideologically, but
right,
in terms
right.
of party. And we must remember that in 1976, the first, I think the only man ever elected from Georgia, right? Jimmy Carter was
right,
elected
exactly.
president. And
right.
he ran
yeah.
as a yeah, but he ran as a centrist. I mean, I'm old enough to remember that campaign. In fact, that was the very first campaign that I really got into. I ended up supporting Gerald Ford, but... That he actually ran as sort of a centrist Democrat, you know, who was a businessman with sort of a common sense Democrat. It'd be interesting if a guy like that would ever get nominated today. I doubt it very much.
Exactly. Yeah, he's a lot of conservatives, at least for where I live in the northeast part of Georgia, are much quicker to claim Newt than we are President Carter. But I was just a boy when he was running for president and got elected, so I don't remember too much about his campaign. I have followed his post-presidential career rather closely. I find it interesting, though. I think one of the great appeals of Mr. Gingrich is the fact that he's a teacher. It's very interesting to listen to him when he whether he's on the debate stage or whether he's on radio or television. I love the way he presents his information and is so well versed in the facts.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, when he talks about, I mean, the amazing thing is how well he can talk without notes. I mean, I've seen
right.
him, you know, I've seen him tackle topics, and he just sits there without notes, and he just he's just an amazing human being. I do have to tell you a Jimmy Carter story very quickly, and then we'll get into our topic here. But 1975, I was going to college in Maryland. And I'm getting ready to go to school in the morning, and I'm watching Channel 5 out of Washington. They had one of these morning programs. It was not a network; it was just an independent. But they had one of these morning programs, you know. They introduced Jimmy Carter, and this was the first time I had ever seen him. And he was trying to make the case that an unknown governor from Georgia, who was not known anywhere else other than Georgia, could be elected president. I remember watching him, and it really stuck with me because, first of all, the accent is something that really stuck with me because I was not familiar with, didn't know that many people from Georgia, of course.
Sure.
So that
sure.
accent was very interesting. But I'll never forget that. I mean, I'll never forget that.
Well, I'll tell you, Sylvia, my wife's mother was actually born in Nigeria. And my wife was raised in what some might call a rather proper fashion, and she has tried to work on that accent with me. So hopefully that is not that's not going to come across too poorly.
No, actually, I actually think it's charming, to be honest with you. I think the accent, whatever it is, whatever part of the country it is, I think it's a charming quality to, and I hope we never lose that. I hope we never lose that as a country. I think it's great to have people with, you know, different regional flavors and so on.
Yeah.
But it just stuck in my mind back then. The accent, the Jimmy Carter accent, really stuck in my mind. I think he's lost it a bit over the years. That's my sense.
Yeah.
It's not as strong.
Sure. Being a politician as long as he
sure.
has, he's lost a little bit of it.
Not as strong as it was when he first ran for president. But one more thing about Jimmy Carter, I think he's had one of the longest post presidencies. Of all time, because you know people forget he left the White House in 1981. So
right.
he's been a post president or an ex president now for 32 years. That's an amazing statistics just in itself. Well, the article that caught my attention was the one you wrote about liberalism and the state of liberalism, and you were talking about the Boy Scouts, the riots in Sweden, and I thought it was interesting because I've kind of been thinking along the same lines. I'm glad you were able to put these ideas together in an article, because I, you know, like you, I've been watching this thing called liberalism, something that has really changed. We talked about this earlier today on the phone, has really changed from, let's say, liberalism in the 70s or even in the 80s when it was more, you know, we would argue with liberals about things like the minimum wage or a Supreme Court nomination or whatever, but now it seems we're arguing with liberals about marriage and abortion
right.
and stuff like that. So it is a little bit different. But give me what inspired you to write this article? I know I also read the letter that you wrote to the Boy Scouts. But what inspired you to write this very fine article about the state of liberalism?
Well, the piece was actually entitled "Living with Liberalism," and I had come across several things over a period of a few days, but the one thing that stuck out to me most was in reading from Drudge about the Swedish riots, and I was reading, I assume, from a European publication that Drudge had linked to, and a quote from one of the politicians over there really caught my eye. And you know, he talked about, I think I have it here exactly. It says, He was expressing his frustration with the riots. And again, one thing I want to point out that I didn't really get into in the column that you're referring to, but from what I understand, the vast majority of those rioting are Muslim, followers of Islam. And so, but this politician was expressing frustration with this, and he was saying that something to the effect of, in Sweden, you've got access to welfare, access to an educational system up to university level, access to public transportation, libraries, health care, to everything, he said, everything. And still they feel the need, these immigrants he was referring to, these Muslim immigrants, the need to riot through stones and Molotov cocktails is ridiculous and a bad excuse, was how he put it. And then he goes on to say that that the problem is, one of the newspaper editors there goes on to say that the problem is not the Swedish government or the Swedish people. It is that they do not want to integrate, she said, and they do not want to live in Swedish society, working, paying taxes, and so on. And to me, that just struck me as really ignorant of what was right in front of their faces. And this is true, of course, as we discussed earlier, across much of Europe, you have such a liberal culture. The politics is so liberal there, and you're really seeing a reaping of what they have sown in these past few years, especially as the economy has turned down all over the world. But these liberal policies is what, for one thing, is what allowed the immigration to take place in the manner that it has. And also, I mean, when you provide individuals, whatever their religious or ethnic persuasion, when you provide them, as the politician said, with everything, you know, with transportation, with welfare, with education, why be surprised when those on the receiving end are going to erupt when they don't get everything that they expect? I mean, when you feed that beast, eventually, you know, it's going to blow up and bite you back. And I think that's what's happening. And somebody pointed out, well, you know, Sweden has had this welfare state for you know, decades now, but they've also, you know, their liberal politics has created the immigration situation that they have. And I think when you mix those two together, somewhat like we're seeing in the United States, with a lot of illegal immigration and a lot of access to services that, you know, welfare services that our government provides, it's bankrupting us. And I think it is a disastrous policy or policies that too many liberals are blind to.
Right. I would argue, and I mean, you're exactly right. I agree with you 100%. I would just add something, or just an observation about Sweden and Europe in particular, that Europe had these had basically started moving toward this welfare approach, really right after World War II.
Right.
If you go back, because I remember friends of mine, you know, 70s and 80s who were here studying or whatever, and we would talk about, you know, the so-called benefits that they had in Europe. So I you know, back in the 70s and 80s, even in the 90s, they had the welfare state. I think what has really changed as well in Europe and has made this even more complicated is the fact that they stopped having babies. So the minute they stop having babies, then the only way they can keep, you know, they can keep their economy going is by bringing in workers from the outside. Many times these workers from the outside are coming in for a job, so they give them benefits, and then eventually they come to terms with the reality that these people are glad you gave them benefits, but they still don't want to be a part of our society because they were never from Sweden in the first place.
Right.
If I move to China, for example, I'm just to give you make one more point here. If I move to China because that's where I can find work, let's just say,
right,
that doesn't mean I'm going to become Chinese. I mean,
right.
At some point, I'm always going to be who I am, and I'll be Chinese conveniently, you might say, and if they offer me benefits, I'll take them. But
right.
I'm never going to become Chinese, more than likely.
Right.
And that's sort of, I think that's what's happening in Sweden and in many of these European countries.
Exactly. The motivations for coming to those countries are not the proper motivations are not there, and of course then they're not motivated to assimilate or integrate as the Swedish editor put it, and you're right, the birth rates in Europe are tragic. It's true in Russia as well. In fact, I wrote a piece very early this year called the Myth of Overpopulation, and I touched on some of the tragic birth rates that we're seeing Russia particularly. I have four children. I have three boys and a girl, and I can remember one of the books that my wife was intent on reading and in having me read as well was What to Expect When Expecting. And someone has authored a book that is What to Expect When You're Not, or When No One Is Expecting, or something, or What to Expect When You're Not Expecting, something along those lines, and talking about the paltry birth rates that we're seeing in so many of these countries because of this myth of overpopulation, which is really tied to another liberal holy grail, if you will, the global warming philosophy and how much that drives today's liberalism. And so you have this idea that humans are warming the earth and that there's too many humans, there's too many people, and of course that helps to justify abortion and along with that the low birth rates that we see.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. We're talking to Trevor Thomas. Trevor is a blogger as well as a contributor to The American Thinker, and as he just told us, a school teacher, high school teacher, right? I think you said, right?
Yes.
High school teacher in Georgia, and the author of many very interesting articles about the current state of liberalism. I'll just tell you one quick story, and then we'll move on to the Boy Scouts, because I think that's another story that hit home with me, even though, of course, my kids are no longer in that age. But I was talking to a fellow that I used to know. We used to be in the same building, and I would run into him whenever I was walking out to the parking lot or something. We would often have chats, and he's originally from Italy, and he was living here in Dallas, representing an Italian company. And, you know, we would talk a lot. And one time he said he was going to go to Italy to – this guy was probably – I'm talking maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, so he was close to 60 years old, so when he and I had this chat. And he said he was going to go to Italy to see his mom and dad, and because they were getting older, and he wanted to make sure that he went to see them, so he went. And when he came back, I asked him, well, you know, how is home? I mean, how did you have? Did you have a good time? And so on. And he didn't go to Rome. He went to a small town, and he said, well, I mean, it was great. My parents are doing great. But he said the amazing thing to me was I didn't see any kids. I went to the park where he grew up, and he says, you know, I remember when I was a kid at this park, or even when we had kids of our own, that the park was full of kids, you know, running around, chasing the ducks, you know, boys playing soccer, girls playing, you know, that thing that, what is that, where they jump with a rope or whatever. And,
right.
You know, the place was just full of mothers and kids.
Right.
Now it's pretty empty. There's not enough kids, not a lot of kids. Lots of people jogging. Okay.
Right.
Of people jogging without kids. And he said it was like a real shock for him. He didn't expect that. And I said to him, well, I think that's pretty common in a lot of other places too. And so it's interesting. These birth rates, I think, have contributed to the need for these immigrations of people. And I think that's, you know, where the clash is happening. But let's talk about the Boy Scouts for a second, because that's something that hit home. I had three boys 10, 15 years ago who were in the Boy Scouts late 90s or so on. And I always thought it was a fantastic organization. I went with my sons to several events, you know, where you stay overnight at a camp and that kind of thing. They were just fantastic. I thought they were great for the kids, for the boys, I guess, to really develop their talents, their self-confidence, and obviously certain values that you want your boys to have. I am absolutely heartbroken about what the Boy Scouts have done. I mean, what are they thinking when they do something like that?
Exactly. And I think it is, it's just like where we are in the debate with over marriage. I mean, who would have thought, even, you know, just 20 years ago, certainly, you know, go back further than that, that we would even be discussing such things. I think when North Carolina, the state of North Carolina, put same-sex marriage, they put the definition of marriage as a one man and one woman on their ballot last year to enshrine that in their constitution. I remember an ad from Billy Graham, the great evangelist, and he expressed his dismay at the fact that we're even having such a debate. As I mentioned to you earlier today when we were talking, you go back as late as the early 1960s, and every state in the United States had laws on their books against homosexual behavior. It was not very long ago across this country that homosexuality was deemed immoral. And this is the heart, the root of the problem with modern liberalism, is that there are no more absolutes. They reject the idea, so many of them, especially those in leadership, of absolute truth. And so whatever a current culture or a current group of people has decided to deem as good and right, well, then that's what it is. And so they ignore scripture and God's teaching on such matters, and they ignore centuries of tradition and good moral practice and such things. And so so that's what you get. I mean, once you have successfully moved away, or successfully moved a moral standard away from the truth, then whoever comes along next is going to find it pretty easy to move the line again. And so that's how we've gotten where we are, I think, with this issue, with the Boy Scouts. I mean, for years they stood strong, and then now after a few decades of fighting this battle, I think so many of them, especially when they see what they deem as, you know, the culture is changing, the attitudes of people are changing, you're finding a much more acceptance of homosexuality. And I wouldn't deny that, but of course that doesn't change the truth. But so many people are willing, you know, to go along with what, you know, seems to be the popular thing or the current trend. And I think that's what's happened with the Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Well, it is really heartbreaking because, as I said, it's been about I'm going to say about 15 years since my three sons were in the Scouts, maybe 10 to 15 years that they were in the Scouts. And I remember so much fun that we had. I mean, I wouldn't say that they were very, very involved, but, you know, they were as involved as I think most boys get. Lots and lots of, you know, great activities with other fathers, and it was just a great time. I mean, we just had a great time. And what I found, I guess, a little surprising is that it would pass 61-39. And
yeah.
I'm wondering, I thought it would be a very close vote, but I guess it really wasn't. I would say that two things that I reacted when I heard about this, I reacted with two things. Number one, were they just being bombarded with lawsuits? In other words, was this a case of the Boy Scouts saying, you know, if we don't do something, well, they're going to be bombarding us with lawsuits and dragging us from one courtroom to the other? Because that's what they do. They wear you out in the courts with all
of these
lawsuits. So that's one thought I thought. Yeah. Let me just finish this one. But that was one thought I had, that maybe they just simply said, you know what, we just cannot afford to spend the next 20 years, you know, arguing with these people in court, because that's what they do. They take you into court, and they have lots and lots of attorneys who are willing to work for them for free to carry their water. The other thing that I thought was, well, there's going to be a bunch of a bunch of parents who are going to pull their kids out. I would pull my kids out.
Absolutely.
If this was happening. So I just thought maybe you could comment on those two things, you know, the litigation madness that so many people in the left will throw at you, just one lawsuit after another, and the reaction of the parents. If you could share, just talk to us about those two things.
Well, I think you're exactly right when it comes to the wanting to avoid, you know, continuing this debate. I think that certainly factored in. One of the things I pointed out in my piece was that, you know, persistent liberalism has worn down many an organization or many an individual, and with their, you know, with the threat of lawsuits or the, you know, the worse even in some cases, you know, and just using the media, which is all too complicit in matters like this, to trumpet the message of modern liberalism. But, you know, one thing I would point out, this is not going to satisfy today's liberals. This is not. And you could already tell by some of the comments, they were happy with the decision, but the fact that, you know, the Boy Scouts are still not allowing homosexuals in leadership roles, that they will continue this fight. This is far from over. And I would hope that anybody that in the leadership in the Boy Scouts would realize that this is not going to stop liberalism from, you know, seeking to make the Boy Scouts into something that few of us would recognize it in just a few years even. And as far as Christian parents or you know, even non-Christian parents who want to live by, you know, similar moral standards, pulling their children out, I think you're going to see that. I really do. I think you're going to see perhaps even a new organization form that will be much along the lines of the Boy Scouts, but holding to those traditional standards, those traditional morals that the Boy Scouts held for over a century. And in fact, I'm trying to talk with local folks who are involved in Boy Scouts and leadership, and I'm sure most people who are in scouting realize this, or if you've been following this story closely at all, the vast majority of those who sponsor Boy Scouts and Boy Scout activities are religious organizations. And so I'm very curious to see what positions some of the churches that are involved with Boy Scouts, what they take here. In fact, I've got a few feelers out there right now trying to get some local reaction to from the church community and what they're going to do, what their reaction is going to be. I'm sure you're going to see those of a more liberal persuasion to continue on as they have been, but especially in this area in the Southeast, I would imagine you would see a great backlash within the church community to this Boy Scout vote.
Trevor, can you stay with us a few more minutes? Because I've got one more point I want to develop with.
Sure.
I want to take a break. Can you stay with me for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Because I want to develop another point about liberalism with you. So let me take a little break, and we'll be right back. We're talking to Trevor Thomas. He's a blogger. He's a political analyst, has his own website. He's a teacher. And we're talking about the current state of liberalism, having a great conversation. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Again, just a quick note here about my book, Cubanos in Wisconsin. The book is available at cubanosinwisconsin.com. We have it in print as well as Kindle. We also have a special feature if you want to dedicate the book. And with Father's Day a couple of weeks away, this may be a great time to get a book and dedicate it to your Cuban father, Cuban grandfather. The book is a story of family and freedom, how our family came to the United States. I'm very grateful for all the wonderful reviews that we've gotten from about the book. And in fact, I just got one this morning from a lady who had just finished reading and sent me a very nice email telling me how much she enjoyed it. So we welcome that from all of you who read the book. And we put many of these reviews at the on the website itself or the Facebook page that we also have. Just a quick heads up, tomorrow we're going to be talking to Jim Roberts. Jim is with the Heritage Foundation. He's actually the person at the Heritage Foundation who's the expert on free trade agreements. And we're going to be talking about free trade agreements with Latin America, whether it's NAFTA, whether it's the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, the Panama Free Trade Agreement. We're going to be talking about these free trade agreements and assessing, well, what's happened with them. NAFTA, for example, is almost 20 years old. So we now have enough time to assess the contribution, or negative or positive, to the American economy. Let's get back with Trevor Thomas. Trevor, thank you so much for staying with us a little bit longer. But I wanted to pursue another point about liberalism, or the state of liberalism. One of the things that I see is that the liberalism as it is right now is unsustainable, in the sense that it destroys the human character, it destroys economies. So after a while, things begin to look like Europe. You know, you look at some of these countries, they don't have any jobs, you know, there are no babies being born. So while it may be, you know, while it may be going well, it is unsustainable. And that may be, the, in a sense, what actually brings it down. What do you think of that argument?
I agree, Silvio, that you cannot continue to deny truth. You know, it's going to come out sooner or later. You're going to have to live and deal with the consequences of your decisions when you are outside of the truth. And eventually, you know, the consequences are you know, going to come to light, and you're going to reap what you sow. As the, of course, is the ancient biblical message. And I think that's what you're seeing is, as we've noted, with you know, what's happening in Europe. Whatever the case may be, whether you're talking about the economy or jobs or with abortion or, you know, and birth rates or with, you know, global warming politics or homosexual behavior, you cannot continue, you know, to deny the truth without, you know, having those consequences. I think that's one of the reasons why you see so many young people who buy into liberalism. It takes them a while. They have to learn those hard lessons before they, you know, see the light sometimes. And that's why as many people age, they tend towards conservative politics and philosophies on matters of life. And so, you know, it's just a matter of dealing with the truth. And, you know, and we've all had to learn those lessons throughout our lives. I know I have. You know, when you deny the truth and you walk in things that you should not be, then you know, you better be ready to reap the consequences of that. And so, I think that, and as you pointed out, hopefully we're seeing people see the light, so to speak, with these things, and that will show up with our, you know, with who we elect and who we put in office as our political leaders.
Right. It's interesting you mentioned young people, because I just saw an article this afternoon about the unemployment rate among young people in Chicago is just going through the roof. I mean,
oh, yes,
in Chicago.
It's Detroit
amazing.
As well.
Yeah, and it's across the country, obviously. Unemployment is higher than normal, but when you look at young people, it's really, really high. And in the black community, I would argue that in the black community, a lot of the youth unemployment is also a consequence of the breakdown in the family. I mean, the
yes.
fact that, you know, you don't, these young boys don't really have fathers to teach them anything. I mean, they're basically growing up without fathers, and that has all kinds of consequences, most of them negative
Absolutely.
For young boys. And so I hate to say it, you know, you have to break it in order to appreciate it. You know, I hate to say that thing, you know, you don't appreciate it until you lose it. But sometimes that is how it happens, that, you know, this has to break down completely before people realize that, you know, this philosophy does not work. One more point that you brought up about young people. I remember some people making the argument that, you know, we conservatives have to listen to the young people because the young people are ahead of us when it comes to same-sex marriage.
Right.
And I said, I wouldn't put a lot of stock on what I was thinking when I was 18.
Exactly.
I mean,
we're going to let the 18 to 24-year-olds decide the our moral compass and the direction of our political parties. I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I think when you're 18 years old, you're 18, and at one time, you could actually serve in the military at that time and wear the uniform of the country. So you are mature to a point, but I don't think that at that age you really know what you want out of life. Well, can you give us a hint about maybe some of the other something else you may be working on, some articles that you may be working on for American Thinker?
I would like to continue with this, pursuing this Boy Scout decision and what the consequences of that are going to be with, especially with the churches that are involved in sponsoring scouting and see where that leads. I don't know if I'll get beyond much of a local flavor on that or not, but also I'm looking at some things when it comes to education, of course, being a teacher and the kind of the state of Christian education, private Christian schools, and some of the opportunities that are there. But if I don't mind, or if you don't mind, I would like to give a plug to my website, and folks can go there and read some of these things that I've written about family and liberalism and global warming and politics and those sorts of things. My website is simply my full name. It's trevorgrantthomas.com. Or you could, if you just want to Google Trevor Thomas columnist, I'm usually pretty high on the list there. I would love for folks to go to my website and check it out. We'll have a few videos there as well. My wife and I have been involved with some rather interesting things over the years, and we've got some videos on there that we've shared as well. And so I'd love for folks to check that out and shoot me an email or get in touch with me and let me know what they think.
Well, that'd be great. I put a link on the show information. I have a link to your website as well as the article that you wrote. So folks don't even have to Google you. They can just hit on
on
the show information. And we certainly hope that people go to your website and check you out. I'm sure you must have already quite a following because of what you write over at the American Thinker. But I just want to tell you that it's a great honor to be with you, and it's a great honor to make this acquaintance with you on the radio, and I hope that we do some of these shows in the future because I think you have a great set of ideas. I was going to say something you mentioned about the churches, and I also, in looking at information about the Boy Scouts this afternoon, preparing for the show, I saw something that there were some churches that were pulling away their support or pulling out of working with Boy Scouts because of this decision. I know our church, St. Catherine of Siena Catholic Church, has a council, or not a council, is it called a council? Gosh, how can I forget? Well, what is the name of the group called? Not a council, a PAC, I think it is, right? What is the group called? I forgot, the Boy Scouts.
What are they called?
I'm drawing a blank. For
yeah, I'm not in scouting. My boys have. I did not grow up scouting, so I'm not familiar with. I'm not able to help you out on that one. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm drawing a blank. I know it's not a. I think it's maybe
troop.
Call
How
a
about
club?
Troop?
A troop. There you go. That's troop. Probably a troop. Yeah, and I know that our church sponsors a troop and different age levels, age levels of boys. And I would have to believe that what the Boy Scouts have just agreed to is not something that traditional Catholics like us will buy into. And I just know that many of the parents who are heavily involved in this are going to be so disappointed with this decision. And I know there is the idea that they could start another Boy Scouts, but what a shame it would be considering the history of the organization and everything already in place. What a shame.
Yeah.
If they would have to walk away.
It would be, you hate to see that, but, we were talking earlier, sometimes when the line in the sand is drawn, you've just got to stand firm and say, I'm not going to go there. And,
You're exactly right. Sometimes
it has to happen. It has to happen.
Yeah, sometimes you got to draw the line and make sure that it is a line that you intend to defend. But I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks for staying a little bit longer, and I really want to thank you very much, and I wish you the best in your writing, and keep up your writing, and we'll probably do this again. I certainly hope so.
Absolutely. That sounds great, Sylvia. Well, thank you for having me, and the honor was all mine. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, you have a good evening. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back with a closing commentary right after this. is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, Tuesday, May the 28th, the day after Memorial Day. And, of course, the month of May is wrapping up here pretty fast. As I mentioned, Wednesday we'll be talking about free trade agreements and Latin America. We'll be talking to Jim Roberts of the Heritage Foundation. This is the weekly program that we do on U.S. Latin America issues, and we're always joined by Michael Prada and Fausto Wirtz, and our special guest is going to be Jim Roberts of the Heritage Foundation. Great topic today with Trevor Thomas. You know, I had been reading his articles at The American Thinker, didn't realize that he had the website that he has, but I definitely would recommend that you all check it out. He's a very interesting fellow, as you could tell from his comments. He's well, you know, well-read, understands the issues. But I got to tell you, as a father of three boys who went through Boy Scouts, this is really heartbreaking what the Boy Scouts of America have done. I mean, the fact that they were willing to throw out whatever it is, 100 years or whatever it is of tradition of the Boy Scouts, just so that they could be politically correct, if that's the right way to put it. I mean, this is a shame, and if I had kids in Boy Scouts, I would pull them out. I would pull them out in protest, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of others who are going to agree with me. This is an outrage to do this to a wonderful organization called the Boy Scouts of America. Well, that's going to do it for today, folks. Thank you so much for listening to our program. Again, my thanks to Trevor Thomas in Georgia, blogger, political analyst, and contributor to The American Thinker. We have a link to his website as well as a link to the article that we were talking about today in the show information. And I definitely would recommend that you check it out. Good stuff. Good stuff from our new friend, Trevor Thomas in Georgia. Everybody have a wonderful evening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.